Welcome to the Future of Learning and Work podcast. I'm your host, Spencer Keir. Each week, I highlight the people and companies shaping the future of education, training, and work. This week's guest is Michael Yaffe, co-founder and CEO of Arist. Arist is a text message-based course platform. Michael also founded Tile.org, which makes in-person conversations with leaders, innovators, and entrepreneurs accessible to everyone. Hope you enjoy, and don't forget to share and review.
Do you mind just giving some background on yourself and your story leading up to Arist?
Yes, certainly. So for me, both my parents are refugees. So I grew up with the realization that for me, education was going to be my only way out. I grew up in Portland, Oregon, and I went to an urban public high school that was extremely diverse socioeconomically. About 5 to 10% of the students were homeless, and another 5 to 10% of the students were extremely wealthy. So children of, Nike executives, Intel executives. And so growing up, I sort of saw the social capital gap and the wealth gap play out in real time in terms of, students' outcomes and students' educational opportunities. And one of the things that I noticed around my sophomore year was that my wealthier friends were often, more successful, in large part because they had access to conversations with really interesting innovators, leaders, and entrepreneurs that were their parents' friends that me and my lower-income friends oftentimes didn't have access to. So sort of my first attempt at trying to solve what I saw as a pretty meaningful social capital gap was an organization I started called Tile. And so Tile essentially put together free live conversations featuring local entrepreneurs and innovators. And we hosted them in the basement of a local theater, and once a month we'd just get 100 students together and one local entrepreneur or innovator for a free talk. And our goal was, unlike TED, where the speaker is speaking at you, our goal here was really to create a space for conversation. So that was a project that I started my sophomore year, and very quickly Tile grew from one location in Portland to about 450 locations in over 50 countries. And so Tile very quickly became one of the world's largest entrepreneurship education nonprofits. And that was sort of my first, major foray into entrepreneurship. And for me, one of the things that blew me away about Tile was the fact that, by year three of working on that nonprofit, we started realizing that our most successful location was in the war zone in Yemen. And I couldn't understand why we were getting more students to come to our events in Yemen than our events in Portland or Boston or LA. And what we started realizing was that in Yemen, because of the conflict, students were desperate for educational resources. And these live events that we were hosting were one of the only educational resources that students had access to. And I just became obsessed with the question of how do we deliver educational content in Yemen, especially given the fact that as an American citizen, I can't travel there, can't send textbooks there, can't send money. I can't, I also couldn't deliver video courses because internet access was so limited. And that was my first realization that, for most of the planet, video courses just don't work. And I became obsessed with the question of, how can we deliver educational content in a place like Yemen? And so that's sort of where the whole concept of text message courses started. Initially, it was just a way for us to teach and train students in the Yemeni war zone, because we realized that even though most people don't have access to the internet, almost everybody has access to SMS or WhatsApp. From there, we launched the first text message course, very quickly realized that along with being really accessible, text message courses were unbelievably effective from a learning outcomes perspective, even in the US where people have plenty of educational resources. And we sort of ran with that. And so we ended up building a text message learning platform. And today, companies like DuPont, GE, and organizations like the state of California, along with, hundreds of independent creators, use Arist to create and launch text message courses for a variety of use cases, including training their employees, reaching their residents, or teaching some of their favorite subjects.
Can we dig into that initial case study in Yemen? And can you talk about what the course was, what the feedback was that you were getting from students, and generally what that experience was like?
Yeah, certainly. So essentially the first text message learning pilot that we ever ran was actually, before we deployed a course in Yemen, our focus was initially on deploying, on testing the model in the US. So we got about 100 students from UCLA and from my high school in Portland to try out a text message course on entrepreneurship that we made. And the initial feedback to us was really striking for two reasons. One, we found that students said they were much more likely and much more willing to take a text message course than a video-based course, in large part because there was a degree of animosity towards video-based training that we were not super aware of. And if you think about, if you step back for a second and think about, you know, the mandate, like most of our experience with video training sort of pre-pandemic, most of the video training that the average person in the US has experienced pre-pandemic was, the mandatory harassment prevention training that they have to do online, the other mandatory compliance trainings that they have to do online, or in the case of many high school students, a random online health class, for example, or US history class that they do online to get remedial credit. And so what we found is that those experiences were often really, really negative. And the first experience that many learners had with digital learning was very, very negative. And so for many learners, the ability to learn via text was sort of very, very refreshing and also met them where they were. And I think that was sort of the second big takeaway for us, was that the simple act of meeting learners where they are and reducing friction in the learning experience so that learners don't have to log into another platform on their laptop and instead have the learning come to them. Just reducing those like two steps in engaging with content ended up seeing much, much higher satisfaction and engagement rates with that learning content. And I think, we're now seeing solutions win, right? If you think of Zoom, the reason people use Zoom is because it's so frictionless to use. And to us, what we were surprised by was the fact that in education, no one had sort of approached the problem from a lens of how can we reduce friction here. Instead, much of the learning industry, and I think this is still the case, is going in the opposite direction, where the question is, how can we increase friction? How can we increase assessments, increase the richness of the content? And that's really not what most learners need,
Absolutely. So can you dig into once you were done with this case study in the US, what the findings were and how you parlayed that into the first course in Yemen?
Yeah, certainly. So with the first course in Yemen, we essentially converted the course into Arabic. And from there, one of my friends in Yemen ended up sharing the course with his colleagues. Because of the language barrier, we weren't able to get super great feedback and really, really granular feedback on that initial course. But since then, we've been able to launch additional courses both in Yemen and in the region. One of my favorite examples of that that we recently deployed was we deployed a COVID-19 training course in the Naki Valley refugee camp in Uganda. And then we were also able to recently deploy a COVID-19 training course to journalists in Sudan. And that was able to get sort of 1,500 journalists across the country rapidly trained on what COVID-19 was. And both of those were incredibly well received. And I think in large part, one of the things that I don't think we fully realize is that for most of the planet, video courses are inaccessible. And so being able to learn via WhatsApp, which is, now one of the dominant messaging platforms globally, is a huge plus for many learners.
And so ARIS started as kind of a social impact or with a nonprofit lens. But now, as you mentioned at the beginning, you're serving corporations, states, schools. What was that transition like, and how do you see long-term the distribution of your customers looking?
Yes, certainly. So I think what we found was that, first off, we saw a lot of early traction with corporate. Harvard Business Publishing heard about our work with students in both in Yemen and in the US relatively early on. And they were really, really taken by the ability for text message courses to fix some of the problems that they were experiencing. They're one of the largest corporate trainers in the world, and they really struggle with getting the executives that they work with to engage with their content, especially when they're busy. And so we started realizing that corporate training in the US was very broken and that our course model could be used to fix a lot of those problems. And the thing is like, if you step back for a second, and if you think about who you can sell to in education, right? As an education company, you can really only sell to five groups. You can sell to companies, universities, K through 12 institutions, students, or parents. And the thing is all of those groups have their limitations in terms of how much funding they have, how quick the sales process is. And we realized pretty quickly that our product was not a good product for, we couldn't sell it to either students or parents directly. We tried selling it to universities and K through 12, institutions, and the sales cycles were just absurdly long. And there wasn't as much of a need, especially pre-pandemic. And what we realized was that corporations had sort of a really, really strong need, a really strong willingness to pay. And we could also use our growth on the corporate side to subsidize our nonprofit work, which is what we're doing now. So essentially every single time an organization like McDonald's, for example, signs up to use the Aeris platform, we're able to subsidize oftentimes 5 to 10 nonprofits. And our focus right now is on smaller nonprofits that have limited budgets. And we're able to subsidize their learning and training work, which for us, ends up creating a much greater impact in the long term than if we were just sort of solely oriented on the nonprofit side.
Absolutely. What are the different metrics or outcomes you're looking at to measure efficacy or student success?
Sure. Yeah. So currently, right off the bat, we track four primary metrics in the Aeris platform. So first off, course completion is a big one. And course completion is sort of a nebulous metric because every platform tracks it differently. And so it's good as an initial metric of are people even like reading and engaging with my content, but it's not a great metric for in-depth learning engagement. So Aeris currently has course completion rates of over 94%. Many of our learners tell us that this is the first time they've actually completed an online course, which is pretty reassuring. But beyond that, what we care deeply about is learner satisfaction. What we find is that when learners like their learning content and are willing to engage with it, generally all of the other metrics that matter, right? Knowledge retention, behavior change, and sort of everything else that tracks to actual real world outcomes, all of those tend to rise as well. So we focus heavily on increasing learner satisfaction. And we currently have a learner satisfaction rate of about 90%, which we're really thrilled about, especially given the fact that the average NPS for a corporate training product in the US is -8, which is absurd, right? I mean that's a terrible, terrible NPS. So we're focused really heavily on just ensuring that people love using Aeris on both the course creation and on the learner side. And then we also track sort of engagement metrics like response rates and answer accuracy rates. And what we find is generally we can increase response rates for a given course by 5 to 10x versus a competing video course or like slideshow. So those are the key metrics that we track. And we're also starting to track sort of behavior change and knowledge retention more. Those are often more difficult to track because they require longer term follow-up. Some of the use cases that we're most proud of, like, for example, an anti-racism course that DoorDash recently deployed, we've had very, very clear feedback from learners that they felt that their behavior was shifting as the course was taking place. And that's something that we're really, 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 really proud of and also really thrilled about.
What does the setup, structure, and delivery of a course look like? And how is that oriented towards learner satisfaction?
Yeah, sure. So the number one way to increase learner satisfaction is to reduce friction. So for us, in terms of setting up and delivering a course, that's sort of our North Star. So right now, learners can sign up for courses in a few ways. So once somebody creates a course on the Aeris platform, which is often as simple as writing a series of text messages and adding some assessment questions, they can launch it to learners either by directly uploading learner phone numbers or pulling from an HRS system. So for example, if McDonald's wants to train, and in all of their managers on, how to be a better leader, they can instantly build that course in the Aeris platform, securely upload or pull all of their manager phone numbers. Then all of their managers will instantly receive a text saying like, hey, McDonald's just enrolled you in this course, text back start to get your first text. So that's one of our most popular enrollment methods, simply because it's instant, very, very secure, and also lets managers enroll in a course without having to do anything. And then for self-serve courses, right? You know, for example, if you're a creator creating a text message course that you want to sell to your clients, we now let organizations embed an Eris course signup widget or box into their website. And so, for example, if you know the Poynter Institute, which is one of our clients, wants to train college students on election misinformation, they can plug in a signup box directly into an article or directly into a website. And as a learner, I can just plug in my phone number, click go, and I'm all set. And so that way, you know, instead of having to, for example, you know, go on to Coursera, create an account, find your course, enroll in the course, and get started, all you have to do is plug in your phone number, click go, and you're all set.
I think the benefits of text message are obvious between accessibility, the increased reach. I think more people have cell phones that have reliable internet access by a wide margin. What are some of the downsides of text message, and how do you remediate those?
Sure. Yeah. So I think before jumping into the downsides, I want to very, very quickly touch on sort of what our most common pushback is. I think, and actually this relates to the downsides. The biggest downside that we found with text messages is sort of the general skepticism that that many learning leaders have with using text. I think what we found is that a lot of platforms that are now actually used for learning quite a bit, like text or Twitter or TikTok, in a recent survey that we did, most Gen Z learners say that they learned the most from TikTok and Twitter. And so what we're finding is that these mediums that are actually generating a lot of positive learning outcomes are often not treated seriously by learning leaders. And we think that's a big red flag and a big blind spot, because the success of many learning organizations will be their ability to, over the course of the next 5 to 10 years, take all of these mediums and meaningfully integrate them and utilize them properly for their own learning content. And that's sort of what we're really focused on, is helping learning leaders really understand the power of tools like text or Twitter or TikTok, and help them figure out ways to embed that into their own learning systems. And we sort of call that nano learning, right? Which is learning in the flow of your day-to-day life on the platforms that you already use. I think one of the biggest downsides of text is just the skepticism, right? I think we've done lots and lots of learning research, and have also utilized research from Stanford, Harvard, and UPenn. All three institutions have done research on text message based behavior change outcomes and knowledge retention outcomes, and the research has been really positive. So really, you know, helping people understand that this is not just a gimmick, and this actually can be a really, really meaningful learning tool, that's a huge barrier. I think the other barrier is, you know, we are seeing greater and greater saturation of text, which concerns us. We think that text should be a premium medium, right? And what we mean by that is every single interaction that you have with a company or with a brand or with anybody else over text should be extremely meaningful and really, really high quality. And what we're seeing is that text message marketing is slowly cannibalizing itself and slowly causing the downfall of text as a sacred medium. And so that worries us quite a bit. We're actually working on building some technology internally to sort of help our clients filter text message marketing, mainly because we, in the long term, see the proliferation of text message marketing as a huge potential downside to using text for learning or to using text for anything else.
Last week, you and I believe your other co-founder published an open letter that was originally shared internally among your employees, but you decided to share publicly about last year with Arist and what you're planning to do in the next year and onward. What is your one-year roadmap and your end vision, and how are you planning to execute on that in the next year?
Yeah, sure. Going back to what I mentioned earlier, Our long-term vision is entirely oriented around reducing friction to both course creation and taking a course. And so with that in mind, you know, our goal is that by the end of 2021, you as a learning designer or as a course creator can create a course within 30 minutes or less, and then launch the course to hundreds of people within, you know, 2 or 3 minutes or less. And so as part of that, we're rebuilding the Eris platform and adding in plenty of new features, including integrations with platforms like Microsoft Teams and Slack. We're adding in a number of new course models, and we're ensuring that Eris is not just a tool for developing sort of, you know, like courses delivered over the course of a few weeks, but can also be used for a variety of holistic learning experiences that take place via text. And so that's a big focus for us. And then the thing that I'm probably most excited about is our ability to use AI tools like GPT-3 to help, you know, course creators rapidly create course content. So our some of the tools that we're working on right now internally, allow us to, for example, if you want to create a course about creating your first podcast, you know, our system can recommend what the first 3 or 4 days of that course look like, and can help you rapidly accelerate the process of creating course content, so that you can focus on really fine tuning, you know, what knowledge you want to share and can get content out the door as fast as possible. For us, we're lucky that we have a library of a few thousand text message courses that we can use to train AI models. And so we've been really focusing on leveraging that to help organizations develop courses faster. So that's probably the thing that I'm most excited about. And for us, you know, we're also looking at potentially launching a standalone content library featuring creators that we really, really admire. And adding that as a subscription offering for both Aris clients and also individuals. So that's our primary focus. I think on a broader level, our goal is that by the end of this year, 100 Fortune 1000 companies are using Aris on a regular basis, and that we have over 10,000 independent creators and educators using the platform as well. And so that's sort of our North Star from a metric point of view.
I'm interested in the original content category. So can you explain what the thinking was behind that, how you're planning to pick creators and how those courses might differ from ones that are user or teacher generated?
Yeah, certainly. So for us, we'll actually likely be relying heavily on user and teacher generated courses. For us, our goal is to really showcase 20 to 50 courses that we think are the best of Aris and can really showcase what can be done with text. And so for us, we're looking at a mix of, taking existing courses developed on the Aris platform that we're huge fans of, and constantly updating the library with new courses that creators build, and also leveraging, some influencers that have approached us about creating text message courses and really working with them to help create them, help create like really phenomenal course content there. What we're finding is that there's plenty of people who have knowledge to share and who have large audiences who are not a good fit for like masterclass and don't want to create a masterclass. We were actually just chatting with one of the world's leading poker players, and he wants to create a course to teach, some of his poker strategy and his best practices, but he doesn't want to do a masterclass and is looking for a different way to teach and train that's not video based. So for those types of use cases, Aris is a perfect platform. And so we're looking at ways to sort of bring in those types of creators as well and really give them a platform. And what we find is that there's sort of a symbiotic relationship there with our corporate clients, because our corporate clients are also looking for ways to continue improving their employees' development. And employees are also looking for new courses that are not just exciting and interesting, but can also really meaningfully advance them as employees.
How do you see text message long-term either supplanting or supplementing other mediums, whether it be video or in person? Is there an opportunity for text to have, a substantial market share on its own, or is it going to be coupled with other mediums?
Sure. Yeah. So what we, and we're obviously really biased, right? That's one thing that I'll sort of preface with. Like, we believe that within the next decade, 80% of learning will happen via text or via other bite-sized mediums, including Twitter and TikTok, which are also, avenues that we're interested in going into in the long term, or also mediums that we're interested in looking at more seriously in the long term. But for us, we believe that learning is going to become very, very polarized, right? You're going to have sort of very, very hands-on, very, very in-depth learning experiences, much like what you find with a lot of sort of really hands-on cohort-based courses or at a university. And so you're going to have these, relatively expensive, very, very rich learning experiences on one end of the spectrum. And on the other end of the spectrum, you're going to have, you know, small bite-sized courses that are really frictionless and really immediate. And that's sort of what we're really focused on, you know, helping bring to life. And we're not as confident about the middle, right? We're not sure if there's a whole lot of room for content in the middle in the long term. But in the meantime, what we found is that, and I think somewhat to our surprise, we found that Aeris ends up being a really good supplement to video-based courses, either as pre-work or as post-work or as sort of a, a part of the course cadence. One of my favorite examples of sort of text message courses and a really hands-on learning experience working symbiotically has been Babson College's summer study program. So this summer, Babson deployed a series of Zoom lectures alongside a series of text message courses to educate students in their summer study program. And that was incredibly effective. The students were able to come to the Zoom lecture having already received some content via Aeris and having already had a chance to think about and reflect on that content via text. And that just made the Zoom discussions, I think, far more engaging and far more impactful as well.
On a personal level, you took a leave from university to work on Aeris. What was that decision like? What were the different considerations at play?
Sure. Yeah. So I was a student at Babson actually. For me, it was a tough decision in large part because I have like six classes left. So I'm super, super close to finishing. Babson has been incredibly supportive as an institution. So at Babson, I believe you can take up to 3 years off to focus on an entrepreneurial venture. I met my co-founders at Babson. Many of our early advisors are professors at Babson, and many of our early investors are Babson alumni. Babson's been incredibly supportive, but I think for me, I just realized that, we're now sort of rapidly hiring people, rapidly growing. We just raised another round of funding. And for us, this is sort of our moment, right? We're now seeing the type of pushback that we saw for text message courses a year ago, we're no longer seeing. We're now actually having people come to us saying, hey, I want to create a text message course. Is this the right platform? Which is amazing because that's an indication that the idea of a text message course has sort of now expanded more broadly beyond just Aeris. So for us, what we're really, really excited about the year ahead. And just about our journey over the course of the next 5 years. And this is what I want to be doing. So I think it just made sense that, I take a break and really focus because there's a lot of work to be done. There's a lot of work that we have to do. It just didn't make sense to continue being in school.
You mentioned that a year ago, there was some resistance or stigma about text message-based courses. I'm sure COVID was a forcing function for a change in opinion there. Can you talk about what the last year was like and how people's opinions changed in that regard?
Yeah, certainly. Yeah, so the last year has been definitely an odd one. For us, and I briefly mentioned this in the open letter that I wrote to our team, which is available online somewhere. But essentially what happened was when COVID hit, all of the corporate clients that we had been working with, and we had spent months trying to get these corporate clients on board and getting their feedback and working with them to kick off pilots, pretty much all of them, canceled our contracts. So we instantly lost a pretty decent amount of revenue. Our revenue actually went to zero completely. We realized that we sort of needed to rethink a lot of things. And so over the course of the next few months, we really just focused on on refining the text message course model and really showcasing that during a pandemic, you can deliver content through text and have it be as impactful as an in-person course. Through sort of lots of pivoting and lots of, work on our end, we were able to win back a lot of corporate clients. So it was sort of this really, really cumbersome journey, I think, for a few months after March, to try to figure out who we were selling to and what the message was. But what we found is prior to COVID-19, people were just so skeptical that anything could be taught via text. And I think there was still a lot of people. I remember I went to a conference in January and I spoke to a learning leader based in San Francisco who said, there's no way that any type of digital learning content via video or via text could ever replace the power of my in-person teaching. This learning leader was very, very, very adamant that digital learning would never be a factor in her programs. Despite my best efforts to convince her that text messaging could actually benefit her in-person programs as well, she was really adamant that this was never going to happen. And then, 2 or 3 months later, she reached out to us saying that, hey, you know, I'm still pretty skeptical about video, but I really want to try out text because I think it's more human than video is, and lets me reach my clients in a way that's a little bit more personal. So we've just seen, I think, people really reconsider the role of digital in their learning and the fact that in-person training can no longer happen and may not be a reality for a while is really forcing a lot of learning leaders to consider, you know, what are the digital learning mediums that I have at my disposal that aren't just video? So I think that that's been interesting. I think also a lot of learning leaders and a lot of organizations are reckoning with the fact that in-person training is extremely expensive and not very scalable. And I think that that's also forced a shift in discussion where, you know, organizations now need to find really, really scalable learning tools and learning outcomes because in-person training is incredibly expensive. Companies would spend prior to COVID $10,000 for a one-day session with an in-person trainer. And now for $10,000 on Aeris, you can train 10,000 people, for 30 days.
Zooming out and looking at the macro educational landscape, what are some of the other trends or problems that you're excited about? You mentioned short form content. What are some other ones?
Sure. Yeah. So I think for us, we're in an educational context where we are thinking a lot about sort of this polarization that we think is already happening and will continue to happen in the learning space. For us, we're really fascinated by the question of what does a sort of very, very rich learning experience look like in digital format? And I think we're starting to see some answers. One of my good friends, Ish, runs a platform called Virtually that's pioneering sort of cohort-based courses. And they've done some really incredible work for very, very rich learning experiences that are done online. They're sort of the exact opposite of what we're doing. And I've been really inspired by Ish and his work. And we're starting to see sort of even some of the work that Professor Scott Galloway is doing with his courses. They're done over a mix of Zoom and Slack, and they're super engaging and very, very high touch. And they've been very well received as well. We're thinking a lot about that level of polarization as well. And I think beyond short form content, we're also thinking a lot about the role of creators. One of the things that we've noticed, which has been really, really fascinating, is that many creators will create phenomenal courses and then really, really struggle to get them to market. And I think the statistics are that 97% of people who create courses on Teachable or on platforms like Teachable don't end up making more than like $100 or $1,000. And that's not good. I think we generally in the learning space want to see more equitable outcomes for course creators. And we spend a lot of our time thinking about like, how can we ensure that when somebody creates a course on Aeris, they actually see a decent amount of revenue consistently. And that's tough, mainly because I think, the problem with a lot of online courses developed by independent creators is that independent creators end up relying on their existing marketing channels to get those courses out the door. But if you're a creator with no marketing channels to start with, if you don't have a large social media following, you're really at a loss. And you can spend hours creating a phenomenal course, and end up with the result that no one's buying it. And that's sort of a problem that we're thinking a lot about because, I think it's going to become a bigger and bigger issue as we see more and more people trying to teach on their own. What we're seeing as well right now is a lot of professors are moving away from their university positions, are creating really phenomenal courses, and then are not able to market them at all because they have no marketing skill. And we actually think that within the next few years, we're going to see dedicated marketing agencies focused on independent course creators, helping them really get their brand and their courses off the ground.
What are some of the other barriers to entry for independent teachers and how can you help provide ancillary services to support them in those areas?
Sure. Yeah, I think the biggest transition that so many course creators have to go through, and we see this a lot with Aeris, is teaching in person and the way that you deliver content in person is completely different than delivering content online, right? The idea of let's make content engaging and how can we do that is not something that most professors are familiar with at all. For example, you know, one of the challenges that we really struggle with when working with professors and independent course creators is like, hey, use an emoji or use a GIF in your course. And that's such a foreign concept to so many people, but something as simple as including emojis or GIFs in your course can actually skyrocket engagement, right? And make your course far more appealing to learners. So that's I think one of the challenges that we've been struggling with and is one of the reasons why we've started working on much more high touch approaches to helping course creators develop content or convert their existing content into ARIS format, mainly because you know we see course creators' inability to transition their knowledge from their existing format into text message format or into video format in an effective way. We see that as a huge roadblock and a huge barrier. So, you know, we're working on a few tools to make that process easier. We actually think that having an AI assistant to help you walk through how to develop an engaging course or how to convert your course in an engaging manner is going to be really helpful. But we're also doing things like launching workshops for course creators, stuff like that. Just helping them realize that, hey, you need to focus on, instead of, you know, focusing on length and hours of seat time, focus on the opposite, right? Focus on making super, super concise, hyper engaging course content that people will, that will add a lot of value in a very short amount of time. I'm not sure if you're familiar with visualized value. It's like what one of my, Jack Butcher is one of my favorite, influencers on Twitter. And a lot of his focus is just on providing lots of value and being able to capture lots of value in a really, really concise way. I mean, that's an ethos that we care a lot about sharing with our course creators as well.
Looking now at the student side and the barriers to entry there or barriers to engagement, particularly since this idea was born out of a desire to help those in war-torn or impoverished areas such as Yemen, what are other problems or barriers to entry for students, especially in those regions, and how do you help lower those barriers?
Yeah, sure. Well, first off, in the US, I mean, one of the, I want to touch on sort of international difficulties in a second, but one of the crazy things that we've noticed in the US is that, you know, 30 million Americans lack access to the internet, even here in the US, right? And I think a lot of learning leaders didn't recognize how many people only had access to learning because it was happening in person. And as soon as the in-person element is taken away, you know, there are thousands of in-person programs targeted towards underrepresented youth or workforce programs targeted towards people who may not have a laptop at home. And, you know, I was talking to the head of workforce development for a city on the West Coast, and they mentioned that they saw their enrollment in workforce training programs go from 500 to 30 people in a day, which is terrible, right? I think the fact that we didn't recognize these gaps more internally is a huge red flag when it comes to making learning accessible, even in the US. And internationally, you know, I think we those same gaps persist, you know, but one of the really, really encouraging things internationally is that in many places, you know, in many countries in Africa, for example, WhatsApp is growing at a really, really rapid rate. And in many cases, some countries will even make WhatsApp free for the residents, right? So I forget which country it is, but every single resident has complete free access to WhatsApp if they have a smartphone. And Facebook has actually done a lot of work to make WhatsApp free and accessible and has partnered with local carriers to make that a reality. So the challenge there is that a lot of disinformation and misinformation also takes place on WhatsApp. So the question is how can we leverage those messaging mediums to deliver the right type of information in a way that is still accessible and effective? So, you know, we do think messaging is the future, you know, internationally. And, you know, what we're sort of curious to see is, you know, as barriers to internet access persists, and as barriers to in-person learning persists, how can we ensure that everybody has equal access to knowledge? Right, and not just to knowledge, but knowledge that leads into some sort of action and can assess some sort of action. So that's what we've been thinking a lot about quite a bit.
Awesome. Well, this has been really insightful and educational. I do want to ask if there's anything you want to leave with the listeners, as well as places they can find you and follow along with Arist.
Yeah, sure thing. I'm on Twitter and my handle is at Real Yoffe. That's Real IOFFE. Feel free to check out Arist. It's Arist, like aristotle.co. It's been an absolute pleasure chatting with you, and really, really appreciate taking the time.
Thanks, Michael.
I hope you enjoyed the conversation. Don't forget to review and share, and stay tuned for more episodes.